Okay, yesterday we left off with some rather disturbing problems. One was that Rebbe Meir was Seisar himself, because we have in the Machlokas of Rebbe Meir and the Chachomim, in the Braita over here, it's Rebbe Meir who says that it's Mishar Shaitan in Tovlim. Tovlim, first of all, itself doesn't make any sense, because Tefillah, of course, for a Tvoyom, is Be'emtza Hayom, so to speak. I mean, it's broad daylight. How could we possibly say that that's the Zman of Shechiva? Furthermore, earlier Rebbe Meir was the one who said that the Shiur is defined by Bnei Adam that are Nechlasim La'echol. Now, how in the world did that turn into something that had to do with the Zman of Tvila during the day? That was one problem we had. Rebbe Eliezer contradicted himself, because in the Mishnah, assuming that the Mishnah is meant to be one piece, the opening, he was the one who said me, Imatai Torin et Shema. It's the Rebbe Eliezer at the end. Jizmash v'leyoz mishash ha-kohanim nechassim l'chol b'trumatam, which would have been the equivalent of the as we said earlier, Tzeta Kochavim. And yet we know in the Braita, it was Rebbe Eliezer, and he's the one who began the whole discussion in the Braita over here. So it was Rebbe Eliezer who was the one who gave us the Shiurim of Oni, not of Meshkiah, not of Tzeta Kochavim, because he said it had to do with the time in which you'd have to start keeping Shabbos and Erev Shabbos, and that was, of course, at least it's a suffix, the time of Shkiah, Ben Hashmoshet. So that was a problem. We had left those problems hanging. So we're up to Omar Mar, four lines up from the bottom on Beis Amad Beis. Today's daf is daf Gemol, Meseches Brachos. Omar Mar, Amalei Rabbi Yehuda v'alo ko'anim mi'ba'od yom him tovlim. And so in the middle of discussion of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda says to him, I understand what you're talking about. How could the Zman of Shechiva be in the middle of the day? In other words, even agreeing, I can't believe this. Today it's for sure over 20 degrees. So even if we want to go so far as to say, as we've seen consistently throughout the Sunya, that there's no such thing as Kriyat Shema B'yom and no such thing as Kriyat Shema B'layla. There's only a din of B'shoch B'cho U'V'Kumercha. You may be able to extend that B'shoch B'cho U'V'Kumercha a little bit in one direction or another, but certainly not to B'od Yom. What are we going to say that B'shoch B'cho is talking about reading the Zman B'shach Shechiva in the middle of the day? Therefore, Taina's Rabbi Yehuda to Rabbi Meir makes no sense. Halo Kohanim b'bo'od yom hem tovlim. That's a good point, says the Rosh HaPikom, and they reveal to Rabbi Meir. What's Rabbi Meir's solution to that? Rabbi Meir says, Hachiko Amarle, look. Mi savadana ben hashmashot didach ka'amina. What do you think? I'm talking about your ben hashmashot. I know what your sheet is. We just said at the end of Nida. Machlokas Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Yehuda as to the length of ben hashmashot, correct? So according to Rabbi Yehuda, Ben HaShemashot, there's a significant amount of time. A Chatzimil that comes out of the Gemara and Shabbos and Pesachim. That's a lot of time. In other words, between the time of the Suffolk, the beginning of the Suffolk, and actual Tzeta Kochavim, when it gets dark, you have quite a few minutes. Precisely how we define it is half of 21 minutes or 18 minutes. But in any event, you'd be right to ask me, assuming that I agreed with you, but I don't agree with you about the length of Ben HaShemashot. Ana ben hashmashot Rabbi Yosi k'amina. Yom Rabbi Yosi ben hashmashot k'erev ayin. Zeniknas v'zeyotzei v'yev shalom odalav. I remember hold. If I hold like Rabbi Yosi, then remember Rabbi Yosi's ben hashmashot. First of all, I mean, there was even a sheet that says that it begins after the end of Rabbi Yosi's ben hashmashot. But in any event, it's just a blink of the eye before actual Tzeta Kochavim. So in order for a Kohen to make sure that he would have Harev Shemen, as long as he did the Tefillah a minute before, that would also be enough. To extend the din of Shechiva into the last moments of pre-Tzeta Kochavim is lo nora. And therefore, you can't ask me that it's illogical. Now, forget about it as being illogical. It's contradictory, though, isn't it? I mean, Kasha to Rabbi Meir, the Rabbi Meir. I mean, first Rabbi Meir said, Mishar shebnei Adam nechlasim le'achol pitan barvei Shabbatot. Here, he says that the shiur is Mishat Tfilah, which is before Ben Hashmashot. The Gemara had earlier proved that Bnei Adam's, the shear of Bnei Adam, is later than the shear of Kohen, meaning the shear of Kohen of Bein Hashmashot. So here he's going back three steps, essentially. Because we have Shkia, we have Pre-Shkia, which is the Tefillah of Kohanim, even if you want to say it's Rav Yossi, it's a little bit before. Then we have Mishasho Kohanim Nechlasim Lechol, which is Tzeta Kochavim. Then we have Mishasho Bnei Adam Nechlasim Lechol Pitan Barve Shabbatot. Now how did he say the first of those and the last of those? I mean, they're four steps apart. Treitanoi, the Rabbi Meir, there's no answer to that. In fact, we have two different reports from the Pesach Medrash of Rabbi Meir. It's this personal sheet. Kasha to Rabbi Eliezer, other Rabbi Eliezer. How about the problem, Rabbi Eliezer? I mean, Rabbi Eliezer apparently is the author of our Mishnah that says, Me'emat Haikor in Kriyat Shema, and it says, Misha Shatanim Nechasim Lecho B'Trumatam. How did he now change his mind to say, Misha Shekidesh Hayom Berev Shabbatot, which is Shkia? There's certainly a difference between Shkia and Seta Kochavim. No answer to that either. I mean, if you believe that the mission is Rebbe Eliezer, then we're forced to conclude that it's Trei Tanaya Libra Rebbe Eliezer. I mean, obviously, the Braita and the Mishnah don't agree. Or, there's a simple solution. Read the Mishnah separated into two sections, as we saw yesterday. Section A. Me'imatai Kohen Kriyat Shema Baravin Misha Shirakohanim L'chasim L'chol B'Trumatan. Fini. Section B. Until when? Ad. So Rebbe Eliezer is just saying Ad. He didn't agree necessarily with the Tanakhama of the Mishnah that was presented as a Stam Mishnah. Well, we know that there's three different shittas at the end of the Mishnah. So what's wrong if we add Rebbe Eliezer to the Chachomim and Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel? And Rebbe Gamliel. I mean, the first part is not necessarily connected at all. The question, however, from all of the shiurim that appear in the Gemara so far, and the truth is we're going to see that there's more to discuss later on, but the problem from the shiurim over here is the minhag. The minhag doesn't seem to fit with any of this, because the minhag, certainly the minhag in most balabatim shuls, is that you daven, basically, Ma'ariv very early. You come down Mincha and you come Ma'ariv. But that's usually done before all of the Shiurim. So how does that work? So Rashi says, amazingly, it doesn't work. You're not really Yotzei Kriyat Shema. And actually well, because since everybody reads Kriyat Shema before he goes to sleep anyway, so, you know, you're Yotzei with Kriyat Shema Alamita. A tremendous problem. It's those points. What do you mean you go to the Kriyat Shema Alamita? First of all, you only read the first parak. So why be Tzaymech Lechatchila to be Yotzi only with the first parak? I mean, we should have to read the whole thing. And then how could we possibly have Birchot Kriyat Shema Kavua on the Kriyat Shema that we're not Yotzi B'chlal? Why should you say Birchot Kriyat Shema on the Kriyat Shema Alamitato according to this? We're going to be called Veya, things like this? And then, I mean, he's got other questions in the Gemara later on that we haven't seen yet. Now, the teretz that Tosfos offers originally, the Rabbeinu Tam, I want to discuss with you later, because we haven't gotten to the requisite shitas of the Gemara to be able to really discuss. However, the other Balei HaTosfos are docha the Rabbeinu Tam. They don't like his pshat, and we'll discuss that when we get to the sugi of the relationship of Tefillah to Kriyat Shema. So far, we don't see any such relationship. So to discuss the Rabbeinu Tam here would be premature, because he talks about the whole thing in terms of the connections, which we haven't seen. But the Re in Tosfos says that it's impossible to say what Rashi is saying. Actually, there's certainly Kriyat Shema, the Beit HaKnesset, is the Iker Kriyat Shema, which is why we Koveya Birchot Kriyat Shema on it, and why we don't have to say all of the three before. And apparently, we Paskin, not like the Mishnah. So we have the Shita over here of Rebbe Eliezer, Misha Shekidesh Hayom. That's talking about Shkia. So if that's the case, the early Ma'ariv is post-Shkia. If it's post-Shkia, even though it's not dark yet, according to Rebbe Eliezer, it'd be Yotzei Kriyat Shema. And so he concludes, it must be that we are actually Somech on that.
There are things even done before Shkia.
The davening we'll talk about, but Tosis takes for granted that there's a relationship between Kriyat Shema and Tefillah, as we'll see later on in the Gemara. That's something that's already the next level of complexity. We're talking only about Kriyat Shema and our sugya as if it exists as a separate entity. Then it says the Mishnah, the Rebbe Eliezer Shita, Ad Sof HaShmura HaRishona. Ad Sof HaShmura HaRishona is a rather vague way of defining an hour on the clock. I mean, what does that mean? Now, first of all, I didn't even know how many of these Ashmurot there are. An Ashmura is still preserved in English, because the way you tell time is with a watch, which is, of course, an Ashmura, right? So Asof Ashmura HaRishona is actually until the end of the first watch. And that's because that's the way that actually you knew about. You had a town crier, and he was part of a shmira on the city, and that was, it's 12 o'clock and all is well. All is well is the shmira, so the watch now became the way in which we tell time. But nonetheless, it sure isn't announcing it's 2 a.m., so in what way, I mean, what's he saying? What is an ashmura? First of all, what does he hold? I mean, we don't even know how many mishmarot there are. Ika saba, we'll see later on, there's a machloket in the Gemara, whether the Laila is split into three mishmarot, and whether the Laila split into four mishmarot. But either way, I mean, ikasava shalosh mishmarot avi Laila. If he holds it split three ways, so leimad arba'a shaot, why doesn't he say? You know, until 4 hours in the night, that's the way they would count time. Starting the clock at zero, at the beginning of the night, and ending it at 12, at the end of the night, and then starting once again at zero at the beginning of the day. Right? So it's the hours are the same as our hours in terms of the numbers, but they would be 12 sections of the day and the night. They would not necessarily be equal. I mean, sure, if it's around the time of the equinox, so then it's equal. But if not, it'd be very unequal. So you have an hour in the daytime being 90 minutes, and an hour in the evening being 40 minutes, you know, or vice versa. But it was always 1/12. So you want to split up the night now by mishmarot. But you could simply tell me, instead of confusing me, what time on the watch it is. And so I'll start talking about the watch. And therefore, if he holds shalosh mishmarot ha'vilayla, he should have said, until 4 o'clock. Ikasava arba mishmarot ha'layla, so leimad shalosh. He said, is it at 3 o'clock? And he's going to split it up to 12 hours now into threes. Li'olam kasava shalosh mishmarot ha'vilayla. We're going to see later on. But Rebbe Eliezer Shita clearly is, the Laila is split into three divisions. And these divisions are, according to Rashi, essentially metaphysical divisions, in which the Hanhoga of the world, and the Malachim, and the Shamayim, and so on, are split into periods, in which there's different kochot that are in charge of the way in which the world is conducted. So you have different mishmarot of Malachim that are giving Shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and so on and so forth. And those are the mishmarot we're referring to. What Rebbe Eliezer is trying to do by giving us a time on the watch is to turn the watch into a physical phenomenon rather than a metaphysical phenomenon. So the reason that he talks about the watch is to actually provide you with a watch. And he's kamashulan the ika mishmarot birakia, the ika mishmarot ba'ara. He wants you to know the fact that mishmarot have also an equivalence on the earth. By the way, not all of the Mefarshim, all of the Rishonim explain it the way I just did. Some learn that the Chiddush is the mishmarot Barakiah as well. But this is a very straightforward shot in the Gemara to continue, if we learn it this way. V'alkom mishmar mishmar yosheva kadosh baruch hu v'shalei ka'ari. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to the changing of the guard with a scream about the Churban, with a roar about the Churban. Shenemar Hashem mimarom yishag, umimaon kotsho yiten kolo. Shaog yishag, again, shaog yishag, we have three shagot then. Yishag, shaog yishag, al navehu on the Beit HaMikdash. V'siman medavar, to translate that mishmar into a phenomena that you could locate on in your home, is that mishmarah rishona chamor no'er. The way to know you're in the first watch is that's the time of the brain of the donkeys out there. Of course, there's too much traffic noise for us to hear that anymore. But once upon a time, it was very, very clear here in Yerushalayim. And there was a dead silence at night. And that's what you heard, was Chamor Noyer. Shniyak lo'avim tzoakim. The second mishmar, the dogs are barking. You still pick some of that up, even if you're not watching 101 Dalmatians. And shlishit tinoki onek mishadei imo. The third mishmar is the time in which you will find an infant nursing from its mother. But you always find infants nursing from its mother to all the young parents in the room. But what this means, you'll find the infants nursing from the mother and then not going back to bed. Usually at least they'll fall asleep on you. No, but this is the end. You might as well get out of bed and give up. V'isha misaperet imbala. And it's a time in which people who are sleeping with each other will be talking with each other because they're both waking up. So, wait a minute. When are these times? Is he talking about this is a sign of the onset of a mishmar? Is this the time of the conclusion of the mishmar? I mean, he's not being very clear. Michael Koshev Rebbe Eliezer. Itchilat mishmarot kachoshev. First of all, what's the logic of providing us 3 points of reference? If he's talking about how to know the beginning, I don't need the name of the beginning of the first mishmar. It's very clear when the first mishmar begins, at nightfall. I mean, so you don't need to tell me when nightfall is. Okay, now it's nightfall. Now you want to know, okay, what's the end of the first mishmar? Okay, so I guess he means the end, right? No, because if it means the end, then what do I need the end of the last mishmar? That's daybreak. So it couldn't mean the end either. So what does he mean? So my kachoshev Rebbe Eliezer, itchilat mishmarot kachoshev, tchilat mishmarot rishonah, what do I need a simen for? Urtahu, nightfall is the simen. Isof mishmarot kachoshev, what's talking about? The end of the mishmar? Sof mishmarot rona lomali, what do I need a simana? Yamama, the simen for that is daybreak. What he's doing is, elachoshev, sof mishmara rishona, tchilata mishmara achrona, v'emtsa'ita. Clearly, what he's giving you is the simonim of significance to you, which is the end. At sofa shmura rishona. Okay, what's the sofa shmura rishona? That's donkey time. And what's the chatzos? The chatzos, that's the klavim tzoakim time. And what would be the beginning of the final mishmara, so you know soon it'll be daybreak in a few hours? Okay, that's the isha misaperti bala. The ibait ema, or we could learn, kulu sof mishmarot kachashiv. Actually, the simen that he gives is a reference to the end of each mishmar. V'chi tema, and you'll ask me, I thought I just asked you that there's no point in giving the end of the last mishmar because anybody could see it's daybreak. Well, not if you live in Manhattan, you can't tell it's daybreak, right? So v'chitem, you're going to ask me, achrona lo tzorek, why do I need a simen for daybreak? Can I just look out the window? What if there aren't any windows? Or what if there isn't any sun? So l'may nafkamina, l'mikri kriyashma, l'mandagoni, v'bayit afer. Somebody lives in Manhattan, or even worse, he might live in Brooklyn, where he never sees the sun. So what does he do? How does he know what time is Kriyat Shema? Lo yada zman Kriyat Shema emat. Kivan di isha misaperet im ba'ala. V'tinok yonek mishadei imo leikum v'likre. He should know by just the phenomena around him when people are stirring and babies are nursing and so on. It's time to get up and to say Kriyat Shema. Now these two tirutzim, interestingly enough, I mean they sound very theoretical, but they have nafkaminas la'alocha in terms of tikkun chatzot. Because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is showing on the relevant moment of the mishmar, then we understand that Rebbe Eliezer's simonim are for that relevant. The basis of the concept of tikkun chatzot and so on is the midrashim that talk about being mitzaim, one's own tefillot, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's sha'agot. In other words, at times that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sensitive and is expressing his pain at the churban, that is a time in which an individual in this world should feel that way and express his feeling, and that is a tikkun, that's a tikkun towards geula. The question is, which teretz do we hold of? If we hold of the first teretz, then indeed there's chatzot, because the emtza de emtza ita turns out to be a special time in which we understand the sha'agah is on the chatzot. But if we go according to the last teretz of the Gemara, and it's interesting because that's what the Shulchan Aruch paskens. But if we go according to the last of the Siddos, they came and tain on him. I mean, the last pshat in the Gemara gives no significance to Chatzot at all. Because actually it's coming out that the Siman is at the end. So then the time for the Tikkunim would be the end of the first third, the second third, or right before dawn. But where would you get Tikkun Chatzot from? There's all types of discussion about that, because it's clear in the Zohar that the Zman of Chatzot per se is a Zman of, that is open to Tefillah. And I mean, we'll see in Yonim of Chatzot actually later on this daf itself, that implied that there's something unique about it. And therefore, you know, this becomes all the discussion. Well, if they would have had the Sefer HaZohar, they would have asked that kind of question, so on and so forth. You often find it, you know, at the early stages of the Gili of the Sefer HaZohar. Continues the Gemara. Omer Rav Yitzchak Bar Shmuel Mishmei Rav. Shalosh Mishmarot Havi Laila, Val Kol Mishmar Mishmar Yosheva Kadosh Baruch Hu V'Shrei Ka'ari V'Omer. We didn't know what the Sha'arga was. Oy lebanim she'ba'avonotehem hecharafti et beiti v'sarafti et hechali v'iglitim levein umot ha'olam. So his shaga is the shaga of frustration and pain about the idiotic nature of the korban. That it's only because of avonos that they have to suffer the korban anyway, and because of that I'm suffering the korban, and now they are left between the umas ha'yo. From, at the time of the Bayit HaRishon.
Yeah.
See how the Chokhmah, how he phrases the question. He's taking for granted that the Bayit Shini is still considered to be a Zman of Galut, which I like. I assume that's why you're saying it. Right, because it was never Mushlam, the Binyan. But the question isn't whether the nature of the Mishmar is necessarily Shaga. Maybe it's responsiveness. And his responsiveness to an Olam of Churban is Shaga. Responsiveness to an Olam of Binyan also has special Zmanim of Simcha. The same way that Tisha B'Av will be a Zman of Simcha, so these Mishmaros, instead of a Shaga Litzara, would be a Shaga, so to speak, of Simcha, or Shaga Keneged Oyvei Yisrael, and so on. So Tanya Omer Rabbi Yossi, Pa'am Achat, Hayiti Ma'alech Baderech, V'nechnasti L'churva Achat Michurvot Yerushalayim Lehitpalel. So far, all we've seen is that there are Mishmarot Balayla. We don't know anything about the significance of Mishmarot B'yom. From the following sugya, it's mashma that there are Mishmarot B'yom in which there's also a Shaga. There's some Urchayla could say that what Rabbi Yossi reports on is Keneged the Tfilais B'yom, not really Keneged Mishmarot. Okay, but the parshas of the sugya is that this is a continuation of the Shaga that we saw earlier. So he was on the road, and he goes into a broken down building of Yerushalayim, in order to be mitpalel. Ba'i liyaw zachur latov v'shamar liyal ha-petach. And so, while he was in the churva, Eliyahu HaNavi comes and waits for him. Rashi learns that shamar means waits, in the sense of aviv shamar et hadavar, shomer emunim. So shomer meaning waiting for something that is important. Others learn shamar liyal ha-petach means literally shamar, because we'll see later on that there's a problem of mazikim in a churva, and so in his standing there he provided a shmira for Rabbi Yossi's tefillah. Acha siyamti tefillati, he waited there until I finished davening. He didn't bother me in the middle of tefillah. Le'achar siyamti tefillati amar li, shalom alecha rabbi. Amarti lo, shalom alecha rabbi umori. Actually, there's a machlokas we've shown him, whether the response of shalom alecha rabbi umori is the response of Talmid L'Rav, because it makes an afkamina l'halacha. What's the shir of Toch Kedei Dibur? Or is it the shir of Toch Kedei Dibur is the response of Talmid L'Rav? Is that Shalom Alech Rabbi, or is it Shalom Alech Rabbi Umori? The Rambam learns it's Shalom Alech Rabbi Umori. Many are mitzayin this to be the mocker of the Rambam. The problem is, it doesn't seem to prove anything, because in the context of Eliyahu calling him Rabbi, and the relationship hasn't been established, you need to be one-upmanship there in order to establish a relationship. Well, you can call me Rabbi, I'll call you Rabbi Umori. But maybe under normal circumstances, if the Rebbe says to you, Shalom Aleichem, it doesn't say Shalom Aleichem Rabbi. Which maybe is a nice way to greet a Talmud, Shalom Aleichem Rabbi. But anyway, in normal circumstances, you wouldn't have to say Shalom Aleichem Rabbi Umori. And it's interesting how there's all kinds of halachic implications out of sugyas here that don't strike you immediately as being nogea. Now, as soon as the relationship was established, this is a fascinating thing, as soon as the relationship was established, Rabbi Yossi was no longer Rabbi, he became Bini. V'amarli Bini, mipnei manich nasa l'churva, so why did you go into this churva? Amarti lo l'itpalel. Amarli, ayalach l'itpalel baderach. Why didn't you daven outside? Amarti lo, can you daven outside? Mityayare, ayiti shema yivseku b'yovrei drachim. That would be as stupid as davening in an airplane where people are walking back and forth. You can't daven like that. V'amarli, so he said, well, ayalach l'itpalel tefillah k'tzara. Would have been better to use the tefillah k'tzara. We'll see later on, there's a special tefillah, which is a condensed version of the Shemona Esrei that takes about a minute to say. That's the Havi Neinu Tefillah. And you should use that. That way you wouldn't have to worry about the stewardite. And you also wouldn't have had to go on into the Churban. That way you could have been Yotzei both things. At that moment, said Rabbi Yossi, I immediately picked up three dinim. First of all, Lamadati Sheinich Vasim L'Churban. V'Lamadati Shemitpalim Baderach. I learned that it's okay to daven outside, but the third thing was shamit palel baderach, mitpalel tefillah k'tzara. That if you're going to do such a thing, you certainly don't attempt to sit there and say, "Oh, normal tefillah with your kaddishim and your this and that." And that's not how you daven. So now the story continues. Well, this is nogei ar sugya, because in the next piece, va'amarli bini, ma kol shamata b'churva zu, what did you hear when you were davening? Because I'll bet you heard something when you went into the Churv of Yerushalayim. V'amarti lo, shamati bat kol shemenahemet ki yonah v'yomeret. I heard the bat kol that was sort of cooing like a pigeon. And it sure doesn't sound like roaring like a lion. And which says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was shoei ka'ariyei, which was what the Pasuk said earlier. Now there's a number of different approaches to that. Why did he hear menahemet ki yonah? Well, the simplest approach, and probably the correct one, is because he didn't hear the Sha'aga. He heard the bat call of the Sha'aga, which is only generated in the same way an echo is generated. So it's a very weak reflection of the Sha'aga, because he wasn't a Navi, and he wasn't mishtamish with Ruach HaKodesh, as the Gemara Chagiga said. The next level down is there's an inyan of bat call where you could sense a reflection of what you would have had through true Ruach HaKodesh. And so, in his vision, all he heard was B'nai Hemet Yonah. However, Alpi Kabbalah, there are differences.
Differences?
You can do better than that.
And.
Richie, I have the solution.
Uh-oh, what is that? Plug in...
Plug in memory.
Plug in memory.
Think
Baskol
sounded like that,
does? No, that's the way Richie hears it. And it wasn't Daffy anyway.
Reflection or reflection.
Surprised
to hear. In any event, what happens is that at the time of the Laila, you have the Hanhogas HaDin. And in Din, you have Shaga Karyeh. But when you have Zvanim of Rachamim and so on, so it's been a Hemet Kiyonah, which are a sexual expression of love, not of din. It's our simon of monogamous marriage in the birds family. So this is an expression of love that he sensed. The omeret oy lebanim she'avonotehem hecharafti et beiti v'sarafti et hechali v'iglitim levein umot. The Amar li and Elio told me chayecha v'chayero shechalo she'azu bilvad omeret kach. It's not only that you stumbled in a unique moment in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu was talking about you, Ela b'cho yom v'yom, shalosh pa'anim omeret kach. Again, this is one of those three times. If the three times are connected to Mishmarot b'layla, then we have a right to say that there's a continuation of the previous sugya. He's telling me it's a din of Mishmarot b'yom as well. From the continuation, there's some who claim that the shalosh pa'anim b'yom is a reference to Tfilot only, and not to Mishmarot.
And then there's different time zones in Shemayim.
Of course, I should hope so. Otherwise, all of those people in Finland, I mean, they're keeping Shabbos when it's not Shabbos, and that would be terrible. Well, the ones that are keeping cold, we should be really keeping Shabbos. And there's clearly time zones, you know?
In Shabbat.
Obviously. Yeah. I mean, what do you think? Only Yerushalayim Shabbat is B'chuv and Kenegid Yerushalayim Shabbat?
Yeah.
What? And not Sydney? And not Helsinki? No, not really. No. And what about if you're in Tel Aviv or you're in the Golan? And what about, according to Ramesha, if you're on the top of a tall building and on the floor of a tall building? In one part it's Shabbos, in the other part it's not Shabbos. So then there also has to be big buildings in Yerushalayim Shomal. Now, obviously, it's not a very serious problem. I mean, nobody ever suggested that there was such a thing as objective time in the Shemayim. Obviously, the concept of time is a local relationship to thought. Whatever that is for you, then that's the world that you're relating to. There's no specific world in which one time is more valuable as opposed to another time. The nature of Bria is defined by Nivroyim. It's not defined by Borim. Mm-hmm. And that's what Bria means.
So there is no time zone in Shemayim.
So there is a time, the time zone that you relate to. I mean, that's what Shemayim is. There's no real Shemayim. Shemayim is part of Bria as well. There's no Bria, there's no Shemayim. The nature of Shemayim is that it's an expression of that which provides for the presence of Adam with the Anhaga of Adam. It's on its own. Whatever the point of the cosmos, it certainly isn't for God. It doesn't add anything to existence. So its existence is itself, not something that's posited by something outside. So existence is itself, and by definition, all of its relationships are relativistic. Have to be. What else could it mean? It's the same thing as the experience of your personal life as a now. What would that... Try to communicate that idea to a being that doesn't live within your universe. Forget about the problem of defining time. I mean, that you know, in the relativistic sense, you know, it'd be impossible to say. He'd ask you how old you are. What would that mean? But the question, I mean, how could you possibly explain how old you are? Bishlema, if you get a message from the other end of the universe and they ask how old you are, you can assume that the response you could explain in terms of how many vibrations and such a frequency of light. I mean, whatever. You know, because you're going to be sharing certain basic values. You could give it in those values. But if you're not members of the same universe, how would you tell them how old you are? Furthermore, why would he even ask you how old you are? That's making a big assumption about the nature of time. Suppose he doesn't perceive time the way you do, and he perceives time the way you perceive space, Lamasha. I'm going to ask you how old you are. As a matter of fact, if you tried to explain that I have a sensation of now, you would have not the slightest idea what you're talking about. What is now supposed to mean? What do you mean when you say, I am alive? Most people think I am alive is by definition a reference to now, which is a completely personal idea. So it doesn't have any objective context at all. See, Richie's falling asleep already. He's convinced he isn't alive. Or maybe he's alive at some other time. Okay, so in any event, the question is a naive question about time zones, Barakia. Right. Continues the Gemara. V'lo zo bilvad, ela, b'sha'ash Yisrael nechlasim l'batei knesiyot l'batei midrashot. And it's not only three times a day, it's whenever anybody says, Yehei Shemei HaGadol Mivorach, and so on, which is Kaddish, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Menaneh HaRosho, he sits there nodding his head and says, yeah, it's a nice idea, you know, but actually HaMelech Shemekalsin Oto B'beito Kach, it'd be nice if I could hear those good words in my own palace. But the way things stand now, it's pretty ridiculous to be hearing Yehei Shmei Rabba Mevorach when there ain't any. Madmalo lahav shiglad banav v'elehem lebanim shegalumi al shulchan avihen. Now here's an interesting question, because it's not in Aramaic. What happened to Yehei Shmei Rabba Mevorach? I mean, what's it says here, Shmei HaGadol? The whole question which Tosis brings over here about the nature of Kaddish Bichlal. First of all, does Yehei Shemei, because this is strange, Shemei is Aramaic, and Hagadol is Hebrew. So is there any specific meaning to the word Shemei? It's referred to the Mahzor Vitri, that Shemei is actually Shem Yud-Hei. Because since it says ki yod al kes yod, milchama l'Hashem ba'amalek, that's a simon that the Shem Hashem ein Hashem malei ve'ein ha'kisei shalem until mechiyat amalek, right? So therefore, yehi Shem Hashem rabah, that there should come that point at which the Shem should become malek. So it's a reference specifically to the breakdown of the Shem in milchama amalek. So it does this, but I mean, from here it's here it seems very clear that that's not what's going on, because it's mashma that we're saying one thing. According to Maharaj of Vichri, it'd be two things: the Shmo should be gadol, and then there should be a brach at Zanatova. Secondly, and this is one of the rare times that you find in a Rishon the word they. Usually you find a source, not they say. I mean, you know, people used to take things seriously. So if you don't say something that they say, you say, either there's a source to it or just nonsense, right? But here Tosva says, you know what they say. Or he says it actually in yeshiva language. The Weltzog. Masha Omrim Ha'olam. So he says, you know what the Welt says about Kaddish, that supposedly it's in Aramaic, because of the fact that it's such a beautiful tefillah, so we don't want the malachim to be mekana. You know, the same thing as the akdamot and shavuos and so on. He says, no, I don't think that really makes sense. And the truth is over here. He says, there are beautiful tefillahs in Hebrew. Whoever heard of such a thing? But anyway, in this Gemara, we have now a taking of the Kaddish, and it appears here in Hebrew. Tana Rabbanit, mipnei shelosha devarim ein nichlasim lechurva. There's three reasons not to go into a churva. Mipnei chashad, mipnei amapolet, mipnei amazikim. First of all, people will immediately suspect that we know why he's tippy-toeing down there for. He's probably got a girl alive in there that he made up with, that she should meet him there. Or mipnei amapolet, or because it's dangerous. If part of it has fallen, the rest of it can fall. Or mipnei amazikim. It's a great place for shadim of all types to hang out in. Now, the Gemara is now troubled by the fact that we give three reasons for the same thing. If there's three reasons, there has to be circumstances in which only one of the reasons would apply. So we'd like to figure out why we need the three, and for each case, the other two wouldn't apply. Give me those cases. As to the Gemara, you say, Mipnei Hachshad. Why bother even mentioning Mipnei Hachshad? Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehiyeh Bedvaro. Amen. The typical Mishma Polet. Why is it not enough to be worried about it being dangerous? What do we have to get into all kinds of other concerns for? Well, there are times in which a churva is not dangerous. In other words, you could certainly conceive of a very strong. Excellent.
That's what it was.
But you can certainly conceive of a case in which a very strong building had some structural damage in one part, which collapsed. The rest of it is in perfectly good shape, and I have no concerns of it falling on me. So then I have to know, nonetheless, don't go in there because of the chshad. But still, typically mishum mazikin. I mean, even if there'd be no problem of sakana, what do I have to talk about chshad for if anyway I shouldn't go in there because there's other dangers involved? It may be a haunted house. Bikshre. He's talking about there's two people. And usually the poltergeist, they don't get two people at a time. You'll notice the only people who see such things are when they're alone. Very strange coincidence. So therefore, if you have two people, there's no problem of mazikin, and it's a new building, so it's strong. The only thing you have to worry about is shad. I thought two people don't have to worry about shad, because, I mean, you know, he's not going to go meet a girl with another person next to him. Well, it depends if they both made a deal. I mean, so, he betrayed Shad Nami Lek, asked the Gemara, betray Uprite. If they're talking about people who are Prutzim, so it depends who you're with. I mean, somebody's going to feel, he doesn't know you, but he knows this guy, I'm not going to be Samech on this person being a Shemer. So therefore, we have to worry about Shad. So now we can imagine a case in which the only reason that is relevant is Shad. Okay. Now, then why not just mention Kshat? Seems to cover all of the cases. Why do I need to know Bipnei Hamapolet? What about Kshat and Mazikin? Well, we'd be talking about two people where there's no Mazikin. and they're kosher, so they're not pritzim, and therefore there's no sham. Nonetheless, you can't go in because of the sakana of collapse. Okay, and what about the other one? He said, "Bnei Amazikim." Why bother mentioning Mazikim? There's always the reason of Chashadim Apolad anyway, isn't there? No. If it's Churva Charete, then it's strong. There's no problem of collapse. If there's two people who are kosher, there's no problem of Chashad. Wait a minute. If there's two people, then it's not going to be haunted, right? So then anyway, I mean, wherever there's no Chashad, there's not going to be any Mazikim. Ah. Bimekoman Chashinan. If it's the shrieking hut or something like that, then you have to be choshesh, because that's a place in which, I mean, everybody knows there's a long history of mazikim. Vibay tema, the truth is, we go back. It's very simple. Olam b'chad, u'b'chur b'chadete. It might be cases where you have a strong building and you don't have to worry about it, and you're only one person, and the reason why chashad wouldn't apply is the kai b'dabra. Basically, you were walking through the Sahara Desert and through the
Sahara Desert.
Great. You walk through the Sahara Desert and you are, you know, with the people in your caravan, and they see you going into some churva somewhere next to a sand dune. They're not going to have a shad that you worked things out to have a woman waiting for you in the middle of the Sahara Desert. So Isha Bedabra Lo Shkicha. It's just too difficult. At least it was before they had cell phones and things like that. Whereas Mishum Mazikin Ika. But there's still a problem. I mean, there's no reason why you shouldn't have haunters in the middle of the Sahara. And so therefore you have to be Chayesh for Mazikin. Turn around, Bona.
Have you heard the what they said?
The Oilam?
Yeah, I know the Oilam. It suggests that the reason it's called a Chorba. This was that Churva.
I've heard that, yeah. Sure, this was the Churva.
I was waiting for you.
The Tzvi Pesach Frank says that Reb Yehuda, the Churva is Reb Yehuda HaKross. It was always called the Churva because it was the Churva that was Nichnas. Reb Yehuda was Nichnas to talk. So to remember the Churva Acha, we could go to Yerushalayim and to make it into Beit Knesset. Reb Yehuda HaKross, it was the Churva.
Even when it's still, it's called a chor. That's
right. That's because it was never really...
It's built on a chor. Right. But that's...
Okay. I could sin it for a longer too.
In any event, it was one of the earliest pieces of information that the early tour guides... Oh, here we go. It's a shoulder bar. May as a neighborhood. It's in his neighborhood.
There are three mitzvahs and bayit sheni there, and they found a house where Nachman Cohen tells us that he held the Avodah Zarah from Bais Rishon in his hand. Which is just like Mishibat the Kotel that did. It's a house from Bais Rishon.
Really?
Avodah Zarah, under the floor. So maybe that has to do with it.
Very interesting. Okay.
From Bais Rishon?
Yeah.
So these three new mikvot that they're uncovering are Bais Rishon mikvot?
The mikvot is a Bais Sheni, and there's one area was Bais Rishon with an Avodah Zarah.
And that really the big cistern that they just opened over there? Yeah, no. You don't know. Interesting. Very interesting. Tanu Rabbanan, Arban Mishmarot Avi Alayla Debre Rebbe, Rebbe Natan Omer Shalosh. The question as to how many ways were Mechalik the Laila Berakia is a question that was a machlok between Rebbe and Rebbe Natan. My time at Rabbi Natan, why does Rabbi Natan insist that there's three? I mean, is that simply pulling a rabbit out of a hat here? It's a pasuk. It says, Vayavo Gid'on umeya ish asherito b'kzei ha-machane rosh ha-ashmoret ha-tichona. Now, last I heard, a tichona, tana ein tichona l'sheish l'fane v'l'acharea. You can't call something the middle unless it's the middle. And therefore, there must be three, one before, one after, and Gid'on got his attack ready in the Tichona. That's a very good point. So, how are you going to respond to that? And as Rebbe says, there's four. How could there be four? So, the thing to do is Rebbe will have to understand my Tichona. It doesn't mean the middle, does it? It means in the middle. And the middle could be an extended middle. I mean, there were two mishmarot in the middle. So it's not giving you precisely when. It's just saying it wasn't one of the framing mishmarot, it was one of the middle mishmarot. So, achat minatichona shebetichonot. Rabbi Nassim says, ah, that's stretching it, Rabbi, that's stretching it. Miktiv tichona shebtichona, that's not what it says. It says, Rosh Hashmot HaTichona, that's the middle. So I like my pshat. In fact, what is pushing Rabbi to say this, that before my time, the Rabbi? Omreb Zrek, Omreb Ami, Omreb Yishub and Levi. Because, otherwise you have a contradiction in the Psukim and Tehillim. Katuv echad omer chatzot laila kum laudot lecha mishpatei tzidkecha. So David HaMelech says, I would wake up at midnight. And yet, Katuv echad omer, kodmu einai ashmorot, that I was one who woke up to ashmorot before the time that you would expect me to have woken up in the morning. That must mean that midnight is two ashmorot before the morning. Okay, tzad. Arba mishmorot havi alayla. Otherwise, something is very inaccurate about these psukim. Rabbi Nassan says it's not a problem. Because a mishmar, in this context, is only the amount of time of a mishmar. It's not the actual mishmar. Until what time was David HaMelech expected to sleep? If he wouldn't have been getting up early to learn Torah, he would have been expected to sleep until the third hour, at Shalosh Sha'ot. Why? Because we'll see later on in the Shir of Tefillah, or Kriyat Shema, that you have until Shalosh Sha'ot, Shekein Derech B'nei Melachim, if you talk about royal family, they would sleep as late as Shalosh Sha'ot. In that case, how many hours early was David waking up if he woke up at Chatzot? 6 hours of the remainder of the night, and two additional hours that he should have been sleeping in the morning, which is 8 hours. But 8 hours is two mishmarot, assuming that there's three mishmarot in the laila, albeit separated between chatz mishmar of a yom and chatz mishmar of a laila. But he's not interested in telling you the technical mishmarot, he's interested in telling you how many hours he woke up early. It was kodmu einai ashmarot, I woke up 8 hours early in order to be mitpalel and learn your Torah.
So that means into the third hour, at the end of the third hour.
Shalosh Sha'ot. Yeah, the third hour. So we have Shit Delilia, Tarte Diyamama, Havelu Shtei Mishmarot. That's the equivalent of two Mishmarot. Rav Ashi says, what are you going to be such a stickler for anyway? I mean, 1.5 isn't Mishmarot. What is David supposed to say? Chatzot Laila Kum Lecha Laudot Lecha Mishpatei Tzidkecha. Kadmu Einai Mishmar V'chetzi. Ah, come on. I mean, a little poetic license. So two Mishmarot are 1.5 Mishmarot is just fine. You don't have to ask this as a kasha b'chlo. V'omer Rebbe Zrek, Omer Rebbe Ami, Omer Rebbe Yeshua ben Levi. Since already we're on the topic of the quotes of Rav Ami, Rav Zika, and so on, that are quoting Rav Yehoshua ben Levi, we might as well tell you another thing that he said, which is that Ein Omrim Bifnei HaMeit Ela Divarav Shel Meit. If one is standing around a Niftar, one should only discuss things. Now there's two ways of learning this. Discuss things that are relevant to the Niftar, or discuss the words of the Niftar. And that way, and we'll see that this depends on what we're talking about over here, is that there's two possible halachot here. By the way, I want to mention to you that fascinatingly, the Rambam brings the din of churva in Hilchot Tefillah, which is astounding. Since the pashtut of the sugya is that Yoanovi was telling him, why did you go into the churva? The passage you could say is that Reb Yossi knew you shouldn't go into a churva in terms of mazikin, but held that tefillah is a mitzvah and maybe would be shomerim in a mazikin. That would be the question of how to learn Eliyahu HaNavi's comment. Eliyahu HaNavi's actions. When it says v'shamarli ala petach, does it indeed mean v'shamarli the way those suggest that his being there was a shmira mitnei mazikin? Or as Rashi says, no, shamarli only means himtin, which would imply there was no need for Shemira. In which case he was agreeing. So when he was telling him, Ibn Eman Ichnasta Bukhurva, the pashas of the sugya is, there's other reasons not to have gone into a sugya, into a churva. Which he immediately understood, what's he telling him? I went into the Yitpalel. I mean, obviously, went into the Yitpalel. I've been waiting for you to finish your davening. What are you telling me? I went into the Yitpalel. I mean, there's got to be a response to Eliyahu by saying I went in Litpalel, which because he held that there's an Indian of Litpalel, Kenega, the reasons that he thought he understood what Eliyahu meant. But nonetheless, we shouldn't have to worry about Litpalel. Eliyahu HaNavi says there's other alternatives to tefillah. But the Rambam apparently understands that the issue of churva is a question of hatamata makom letefillah. It's not a correct place to daven, because he talks about in Hilchot Tefillah the way in which you have to prepare your heart, the way in which you prepare your body, and the way in which you prepare the environment when you're going to daven. So churva is one of the preparations. Don't be in a churva when you're coming to daven. This is, we have a halacha. Don't be standing on a high place when you're daven. Mima makim karatira. This also did not be mitpalel of the churva. He has to be learning the sugya very, very differently from the way we just explained it. So now, getting back now to our sugya, in omri b'fnei ha'met, omer ababa parkanu. So again, there's two ways of understanding this. In omri b'fnei ha'met means you're now within arba amot of the mate, and the problem over here is lo eg lo rash, or is the problem of kavod ha'met. We'll see later on. I'm sure many of you are familiar, just halacha l'maisa. For instance, you don't wear your tzitzit out in the Beit HaKfarot, because it's as if you're laughing at the meitim, so to speak. You're saying, I don't take into consideration the advantages of being alive. I take them for granted. Right? But it's normally a person, when he's in front of a meit, should not take for granted he's alive and just laugh at the fact that others are dead and don't have an opportunity to do mitzvot. I mean, it's absurd to act that way. So it becomes a loig l'rash. But if you're not within arba amot of the meit, so then l'chor, there shouldn't be a problem. However, there's another concept, which is the bizayon of the meit. In other words, to be acting without any responsiveness to the fact of death, to make it appear as if it's just meaningless, then what you're doing is mizalzel in the covet of the meis b'chlal. That's no longer important. I don't have to worry about the fact that this person's dead. He's not here anyway, so who cares? You know, maybe we should make a picnic on his tummy. Right? I mean, that's the attitude. I mean, everyone understands. It's a zilzul of the mate. So the question over here is exactly what is the issue. So Rav Ami Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says the idea is Ikari Amri Amar Baba Bakana Lo Amar Ela B'Divrei Torah Avo B'Mili De'Alma Let Lanba. Some learn that this is dafka not to be speaking in Divrei Torah unless those Divrei Torah have to do with the mate. So in other words, the simple way of learning, most learn it, is that if you're saying Divrei Torah in order to come to speak about like a hesped, so you're saying Divrei Torah, which are not directly to get an eight, however, as a result of these Divrei Torah, you'll be able to come and say, and so-and-so in his lifetime was Mekayim very much, these dinim and so on, so that would be Dvarav Shomet. Or, as some Achronim learned, Dvarav Shomet, say over the Divrei Torah that the mate himself had said, which couldn't possibly be lo egel rash because tiftot avdov avot bekever, essentially. He's still alive in terms of the Torah that he said. Okay, that would be more of a getter of a lo egel rash, if that's the pshat. The Yikre Amad, others say, Amar Baba Barkana lo Amar Nadal, a feel of a Divrei Torah. What we're talking about over here is the question of zilzul amet, not lo egel rash. So many learn that the nafkamina between these two approaches is, what are we talking about? Is the Gela Alokha? Is it dafke betoch arbaamis, even if chutz arbaamis? Is it chutz arbaamis? We're saying there's an inyan here of zilzol. Kol shekein miladiyama. If the problem is zilzol, so then for sure, if you just go ahead and keep talking about, you know, what the football scores are today, when somebody's lying dead in front of you, is a tremendous zilzol. Wait a minute. Now, getting back to that thing about David says that I woke up at chatzot. Chatzot Laila, I mean, that's an awfully clear-cut moment, isn't it? Chatzot Laila, not, you know, approximately midnight. There was exactly at midnight I would get up. How the heck would he know exactly when midnight was, anyway? All right, I mean, that's going to be a big sugya, which is going to take us all the way through the next stuff. But the question is it true? I thought David takes pride in the fact that he was up even early in the evening. So David b'pagad alayla havikoi miurta havikoi. Didn't he wake up early in the evening? Dichtiv kadamti b'neshef v'ashaver. Neshef, we're assuming, means the evening time. Wait a minute, how do you know neshef means evening time? Maybe it means the morning or something. So mimayda neshef urtu, because it says b'neshef b'erev yom, so it's got to be an evening. Be'ishon Laila v'afela. So Neshef clearly is a reference to Laila. Amar Rav Oshi, Amar Rav Acha, Ochi Kamar. What David was saying when he said Chatzot Laila Akum was simply that Meolam Lo Avar Alai Chatzot Laila B'Shina. At midnight you'll always find me up.
That was Insomniac to join the
alarm. We'll get to the alarm clock. Rabbi Zeir Amar. Rabbi Zeir says that there's two separate issues over here. Ad Chatzot Laila Hayam Mitnamnem Kasus. There were two different things. In fact, when he says Kadamti Beneshepa Shaveya, but he was still sleepy. Who knows, he would sort of slumber, doze for a minute, wake up. That was in the early evening. Sort of like some of the people on this table.
Was named pleasure.
Mitnam named Kasus. But actually Kasus is putting it a little nicely, because as the Gemara says, a horse never really sleeps. Moes b'sheina asus. You know, I mean, we don't have really a mitnam nem kasus around the table, but we have a mitnam nem. So, that's the question of nim. In other words, if you ask him, will he remember? Because that's the sign of mitnam nem, as opposed to real sleep.
That's when the horses don't sleep.
That they would remember.
That the horses are mitnam nem. They don't actually. They're not completely asleep. Always a little bit aware, ready to pop up at a moment's notice. And so David HaMelech would sleep like that until Chatzos. When he says Chatzot Laila Akum, he doesn't mean Akum from sleeping. It means Akum from this sleepy state, and then I was strong like a lion. That's the difference.
Who sleeps 18 hours a day?
Yeah. Ravashi Amar, At Chatzot Laila, Ravashi says there's two different things. One is referring to the Esek in Terah. So then, it's after Chatzos, but At Chatzot Laila, so Haya Osek B'Divrei Torah, when it says after Chatzos, Chatzos Laila Akum Lahodot Lecha Mishpatei Tzidkecha, that was Mikan Ve'elok B'Shirot B'Tishpachot. That was the time of Hodayat HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his writing his Tehillim and so on and so forth. So there's no contradiction between these two things. He's referring to two different things that he used to do at night. Part of it was the learning time of Torah, and the other part was his writing time of poetry and his singing and so on. Now, getting back to this Neshef idea, I mean, Neshef, I thought, clearly means morning. Now, I can say Neshef is Urta. I'll prove to you that Nefesh is morning time. Neshef is Safra. Dichtiv vayakem David, mehaneshef v'ad ha'erev. Now, what do you think that means? Mehaneshef ad ha'erev. Sure, it sounds to me from morning to evening. I mean, so how could you say it means from evening to evening? So it's got to be, if I mean, even if you're going to tell me that maybe the point over here is that it's not mitzafra bad laila, it means mineshe bad erev from this evening until the next evening. There are 24 hours in which this war went on. Oh, Lord. Iachi lichtov mi'aneshe bad aneshe from mi'arev ad erev. Why would we change it from Neshef to Erev? Let me just say, from Neshef to Neshef, and so on. So therefore, it's got to be that it's two different moments. So clearly, this Neshef means morning. So how do you explain the fact that you proved Neshef be'erev yom, which Neshef means Laila? Omar Rava, look, because you're not concentrating on what the word means. Neshef means simply to move on, to be pulled away, like we have the Bukid Agba, the Shaf Miduchte we had back in Chulin, right? That's the famous Buka song, the Buka Buka, with everybody. Buka out of the Shafi Duchte is that was moved from its place. So the Neshef is a reference to the switchover in time. It could be the switchover of the evening to the night, or it could be a switchover of the dawn to the day. I mean, you can use it either way. And therefore, there's Trainish Behavi, there's Nashaf Lailia, Vyati Yamama, but there's Nashaf Yamama, Vati Lailia. So that's not a problem. Am I avoiding what?
The word jump.
Jump.
And the switch being a jump.
Kvitsa. I'm avoiding the word jump. Yeah. Because the shuff is, first of all, does not necessarily mean jump, but it doesn't necessarily have to imply a rapid change to not shuff. It's the time of change. I don't want to say that like Rabbi Yossi. You could say it's literally shekafats. which is Rashi's Lashon. But I don't think that it's part of the sugya. In any event, getting back to the other problem, I mean, now I understand that, yes, it's true that David did two different things. It says, Kadmu einai ashmorot. What was that for? Lasiach b'imratecha, David says. I did that to speak about Divrei Torah. Then Chatzot Laila. Why did I do that? That was Lahodot. That was in order to sing Shiros v'Tish Baruchos. The question is, however, even though you've told me there were two points, how did he know when it was Chatzot? He says it like, wow, Chatzot Laila. V'David mi havi yada palga de Laila ya'imat. How would David know when Chatzot was? Hashta Moshe Rabbeinu lo havi yada. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't seem to know when Chatzot is. Because, I mean, he tells Paro, hey, Paro baby, Kachatzot halayla ani yotzei betoch Mitzrayim. Around midnight. What do you mean around midnight? I mean, that's the way to say. I mean, come on. You know, David wants to make an impression. He says, right there at the moment of midnight. I mean, that's what he should say. At midnight, it's all over. As the clock strikes 12, and then Paro's waiting with a boom, boom. The whole drama. You mess up the drama when you say, sometime around midnight. That's Jewish style. Exactly. So what's he saying? Kichatzot. Ilaimidam like Kuchabrihu Kichatzot. I mean, certainly God was more dramatic than that, but God's going to tell him, you know, approximately midnight, I'm not quite sure when, but, you know, maybe my watch isn't accurate. Maybe Kasveka Kamishma. Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu say approximately? But clearly HaKadosh Baruch Hu must have told Moshe, Kachatzot. But Moshe knew that Paro was a stickler. You know, because Paro always used to check. I mean, if one of those behemoths would have died, he would have said, it's a coincidence. So you're telling me Chatzot. Okay, come on, Moses, the baby. You tell me when it's going to be. And then Moshe's got a problem because he's not on atomic time over here. So therefore, Moshe wasn't clear. So he tells Paro, look, I don't want to get into any kind of discussions, okay, around midnight. So he says, Chatzot. In other words, he couldn't have shown him. So Moshe was unable to really be minded to David Aviyada. That's because David had an alarm clock. David Simana Avale. Damer of Akaba Biznam, Reb Shimon Chasida, Kinor Hayatalui Lamala Mimitatosha David. David Amelech had a Kinor above his bed, the Kivanchi Yia Chatzot Laila, and right at Chatzot, he had a Ruach Tzvonit. That would come right through the opening of the window by the kinor. It would be noshevet bo, and the kinor would start to play. And David would immediately note, aha, it's Chatzot. Miyad haya omed v'yosek batorah shahala amud hashachar. And so he would get up, and that way he would be yosek batorah till the morning. It's machlokus whether this is b'derek neis, or the point over here is that, as the Gemara says, that Ruach Tzafon is Menashevet alone only from Chatzot. So he relied on this natural phenomenon. He set up the window to channel the Ruach Tzafon directly to his kinor. But it wasn't been Semech on an ace that, you know, he would be woken up min
HaShemayim. What happened to the dog's
body? It's a little late today.
Halki's brain.
It's a little late today, so maybe the exciting continuation of the sugya. What happened after he got up in the morning and finished his learning?
Right.
That we will discuss tomorrow. Maybe, but bring your weapons with you. Obviously, that would be important.
Rebbe made a point about
which one?
When the wind was up.